Hi everyone, it's Jess here. Welcome to the June call. Today we're going to be chatting with Stephanie from Phylogeny and we're going to be chatting with Greg from Bottles and Bits. And I can see they're both on the call. Hooray, that's awesome. You guys are there and ready to go. You're both muted at the moment though, so don't try to say hello. So just a quick bit of housekeeping. The chat function for this call seems to be having some hiccups this month for some weird reason. So we've actually set a chat up over in the Facebook group. It's pinned to the top of the group. So if you're listening into the call, or those of you also who are on the call, if you want to text chat anything when you're not live, just head over there and we'll just have a chat over there instead this month. Kath will be hanging out over there and she'll be helping you out. She'll be sharing the links for the shops we're going to be talking about today. And yeah, it's going to be good fun. So things will be running as per normal. I'm going to chat with our two business intensive lovelies first, and then at the end we'll do a bit of a Q&A. So if you have questions to submit, you can either just put them in the chat over on the Facebook group, that's absolutely fine, or you can use the Q&A setting in the actual event page. There's a place where you can submit questions. You can do that as well, whichever one's easiest for you. So without further ado, I think it's time to get started, and we're going to start with the lovely Steph. Steph, you're now live. Hello.
Hello.
It's great to have you with us.
How are you? I don't know if my video is working.
But... No, it's only audio, so you don't need your video. Okay. So it's all
perfect.
Good. Welcome to the call. Now, whereabouts are you? I always love to find out where people are.
Great question. I'm actually located in New York, but not near the city. I'm actually closer to Canada than I am to New York City.
Cool.
Yeah, and so we live in the mountains called the Adirondacks. And
I've never known how to pronounce that, so thank you.
Yes, Adirondacks. And so I am probably one of the few, at least listening from some of the former calls, I'm the only one without an Australian accent. So I hope my accent doesn't drive you insane.
Oh, no, no.
Yeah, no, y'all have these lovely accents that I don't have.
So. Your accent is lovely. We've had people from America, Canada, all sorts on the calls before, so we're all over the world. It's all good.
Yes.
So let's dive in. Before we start, are you happy for me to share anything you put in your questionnaire with the circle?
Sure, absolutely.
Great. Okay, let's dive in because we've got half an hour. So now can you just tell us quickly what you do for those of us who don't know?
Sure. So I paint primarily watercolors and then convert those into stationery. Mm-hmm. Right now, my main focus is on note cards that are printed on 100% post-consumer recycled paper. Mm-hmm. And so my customers are typically, though, they're usually older and they don't actually seem to be all that they don't really seem to be all that eco-conscious, I guess is really the case.
Right.
So I'm having that interesting thing where I have my own personal preferences for that and my customers don't. But so that's what Phylogeny is, and for the most part, and actually so I'm a scientist by my day job, and so the term phylogeny is a scientific term for the relationship between all living species, and so a lot of my artwork stems from that concept and the interactions that happen within gardens of flowers and bugs and pollinators and all sorts of fun stuff.
That's cool. It takes me back to my biology study days in uni back in the day. I have a science degree as well, so there you go. I just never practiced as a research scientist. So that's very cool. And I love that, you know, you've got a couple of elements, I think, there. And I just want to, because you brought up the issue of the customers, you said that that's the number one thing you struggle with at the moment is your brand identity. Because from what you just said and what you wrote, you have a bit of a tension between kind of what you want your brand to be and what it actually is, if you know what I mean. Like, it seems to be, you know, you want it to be maybe more focused on the scientific eco side of things, whereas it tends that your customers, like you said, tend to be perhaps older ladies who are more interested in just the pretty garden pictures.
Yes, exactly. Yes. I'm going through a brand identity crisis, I think. It's really the case.
Okay, so let's talk a bit about that. Now, how have you discovered this whole customer, ideal customer, well, perhaps not ideal customer, but who your customer is at the moment?
Right. So I participate in some live events, typically around the holidays. Mm-hmm. And so those I've actually only done for a few years, but I have gotten many repeat customers from that and also online, and have built quite a relationship with those people who come back year after year, mm-hmm. and are interested in seeing how the line has developed and what new things I'm offering. But also my brand name has changed over the years, and so it's been nice to have people come along with me for the ride.
But the
primary customers that I have stopping by my shop, though, tend to be these older women who are probably gardeners, or probably, and they appreciate the concept of keeping in touch by writing, as opposed to younger people who, like myself, would be more apt to email or to text. But I find that there's so much value in being able to send a note. And I think I share that with my customers, but there's a generation gap.
Okay.
And so it's sort of hard to decide which way to go with it.
Well, it really comes down to you if you're comfortable following the customer, if you know what I mean. Like, you know, if that tends to be who is attracted to your work, and you gave a couple of good reasons why they're attracted to your work. Not only is it because of the style and the subject matter, but because of the very nature of what it is. So, you know, your stuff, I think, tends to be, you know, it would be something you would send to someone you cared about, or a friend, like another lady friend who you wanted to keep in contact with, or you might even send it to your daughter or your daughter-in-law. And whereas younger people who tend to send cards would probably tend more often to send, you know, the more hipster or ironic type of designs,
right.
You know, like if I'm looking, I mean, I'm in my 30s, if I'm looking for a card to send to my best friend, I try to find something with, like, you know, a grumpy cat, or, you know, like something a bit hipster, or a unicorn fighting rainbows, you know, because she likes that sort of thing. So whereas I wouldn't, you know, I would buy one of those cards for my mum as well, because, you know, she likes gardening, and I think, you know, that would be appealing to her. So I guess, you know, what does that say? Does that say that just so happens the style of artwork you make appeals to that particular demographic, and it kind of comes down to the fact that you have to run with that. And, you know, if you do run with that, you're probably going to find you get way more successful way faster, because you're actually going to angle everything towards appealing to that demographic, rather than this kind of tension and trying to appeal to a different demographic because you want to. Whereas opposed to just going, you know, flowing and accepting that that's your demographic and trying to make it as wonderful as possible for those people. I mean, do you feel like that's something you could do, or at least experiment with for a year, and like say, I'm just, for the next year, I'm just going to go with it. I'm just going to follow my demographic, who has turned up as being my target customer, even though that's not who I originally intended to be my target customer. And I'm just going to try to, you know, everything I do with my branding, I'm going to try to capture those people.
Yes, absolutely. I think that's a very smart way to go about it. But that does raise the question then of how do I target my social media with that? So along with this sort of like identity crisis, like I mentioned, comes all of the social media, which I have adamantly opposed with a passion, social media, for several years. So I'm also in my 30s. I was around for the beginning of Facebook. And then once everybody started jumping on the bandwagon, I jumped off.
Yep.
And so I've recently re-entered the Facebook world. In fact, most of my friends were surprised to see I still exist on Facebook. And now all of a sudden, actually, as a side story, sort of this artwork was actually just sort of my personal space that I decided to turn into this hobby business that I am growing now. But actually, it was so personal to me that I didn't tell most people.
Right.
Most of the people I was closest with did not know until my friend showed up at one of my live events and shocked to be you know, buying cards from her best friend, which was, you know, something that was surprising for both of us. Mm-hmm. But so now trying to figure out how to run Facebook from the standpoint of a business page, mm-hmm. as opposed to, you know, being in university and having a different mentality on it, but also from that trying to get Instagram and trying to, you know, like build a blog, which I find I am awful at blogging. So, you know, do you have any advice on how I roll that demographic aspect into my social media then?
I definitely recommend you for now stick with Facebook, because for your demographic, that's the social media they're most likely to be on. Like, okay. If I look at my parents' generation, you know, 50s, 60s, mm-hmm. none of them are on Instagram or anything else, but they're all on Facebook, and they all hang out there a lot because they talk to their friends and they share grandkid pictures and, you know, all that sort of stuff.
Okay.
So I think Facebook's probably the one to go with for you, for your particular demographic. And, you know, it comes down to thinking from, you know, you have to try to put yourself in the mind of your customer. You know, why would they be interested in buying from you, but also why would they be interested in following you? So on your Facebook, you could be sharing, obviously, new products. You could be sharing artwork in progress. You know, whenever you have a product that's in a different format, you would share that as well. But also think about how you share it. So, for example, you know, you might have a new card that's come out and say, you know, this would be, you know, have you, or you know, do you want to get in touch with your sister, or is it someone's birthday or something like that? This would be a perfect card for that. So actually give them a reason for the card. I'm assuming they're kind of blank cards, is that right, from looking at them?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So they can do anything they want with it. So in that case, even more so, it's a good idea to give them reasons to buy and send the cards. So, you know, have you lost touch, or, you know, did you want to get back in touch with your friends, or, you know, there's something so personal about sending a card with a message in it. Have you done that lately? Here would be a perfect way to do that. So, you know, basically, if you could come up with a big list of all the possible reasons people might buy and send your cards, and I know I'm just focusing on the cards for now, but and then you can use them in your social media as kind of prompts for people, because when somebody reads something like that, they might be like, it'll kind of trigger their mind and say, oh yeah, well, I haven't done that, or oh, I've been thinking I'd like to do that but haven't got around to it. So you know, you saying that might be just that trigger they need to actually buy your item to do that very thing.
That's a great idea. Thank you.
That's all right. So I think that would be good. And for blogging, a lot of people get really nervous and really uptight about blogging, thinking it has to be something spectacular and really over the top and special. But, you know, it can be as simple as sharing a couple of photos of a work in progress and one paragraph about, you know, what you're doing. Boom, you're done. Like, it doesn't have to be really lengthy. It doesn't have to be really detailed. It can just be, you know, and you would take what you put on that blog post. Say you shared three photos of a work in progress. You'd then share one of those photos on Facebook with a link back to the blog post. And you could do that multiple times over the next week. You know, you could share the different photos and still keep linking back to the same blog post, because honestly, the chances of everybody seeing every post are very low. So, you know, right. You can actually increase your chances of contacting, you know, having that interaction with your followers and your fans by doing something like that. So it doesn't have to be a big effort. Because I know it can feel overwhelming and like, oh God, what am I going to talk about? Stuff like that.
Right, exactly. And trying to like branch out, you know, so actually I find interesting to me is that I do have this connection to science, obviously, but so anytime I come across a post about, you know, like actually, so there's this big drive right now. The president of the United States has just issued this proclamation about supporting pollinators, and so trying to like drive these species back because we've killed them all off. Mm-hmm. So detrimentally, but so in that case, you know, so I put that on Facebook and that got some attention a little bit, but mm-hmm. maybe, you know, trying to link it back, I keep forgetting that I have the blog. I just kind of, you know, pushed it back out of my mind, like not something I'm currently aware of, but I think I should probably get back into that.
Now, do you have a mailing list set up?
So I do. So I have a mailing list. So I only have a handful of people registered for it, and I'm not entirely sure how to gain followers because I think there's been a recent thing within the Create and Thrive group. Somebody had posted something about about MailChimp and about why you need to have a mailing system, but trying to find people versus blog versus shop, I think is really the difference, because I could gain followers for my blog through a newsletter, but then those people aren't necessarily looking at being on a newsletter for my shop.
Right.
Okay. If that makes sense. So I'm not entirely sure how to find people who want to be on a newsletter for the shop aspect.
Okay. So the blog and the shop are really the same entity. So for example,
they should be, yeah.
So whenever you write
my identity.
My advice for, those of us in the creative sphere is, when you write something on your blog, send it out to your mailing list. So don't let people subscribe to your blog by RSS or something. Tell them they have to subscribe by email, right? And use your MailChimp sign up this is how you subscribe by email to get new blog posts and also updates about new products. Okay, so it's one and the same thing. So when you're sharing blog posts, this is obviously if you're writing one or two posts a week, you could still email out every single one of those and that would be fine. But if you're doing it once a day, then that's probably a bit too much email for people, and you could send a digest or something. So, basically it's, everything, the idea of this whole system is, your social media is supposed to be sending people back to your site. Your blog is not only a way for your customers to find out more about you and be enticed by your brand, it's also a way for people to find you via search, obviously, because the more content you can put on your website and the more regularly, the more likelihood it is that when people search for what you make, it'll show up in Google search results, right? And then the mailing list is really that's what you should be driving everybody back to, because that's the way that you have direct access to potential customers is through your mailing list. And so you don't necessarily, you don't have to send them sales messages all the time, but so you send them a blog post about, this new painting I'm doing, or I'm going to be exhibiting at this event if you want to come and see me in person. And then you will send an email with, I just released these new cards, but you'll tell a story. You won't just say, here's a new card. You'll say, I made these new cards because, and explain the picture and the purpose behind the picture, but also what use they could use the cards for. And this comes back to what we were talking about earlier about the different reasons people might buy and use your cards or your artwork, or who are they going to buy it for, and so on and so forth. So it's really a system that should all work together in order to build up a connection with your customer, because especially selling online, it's all about building up a relationship and it's all about building up trust. And, by building that trust up via social media and then your newsletter and your blog, people get to know you and people like to buy from the people they know. So that's kind of the overall goal of it all, if that makes sense.
It does.
So it does make sense. To get people signing up, come back to that, you could have your blog and you'll have, if you want blog posts direct to your email, sign up here, with a little message that, I'll also send you other emails about other stuff. I always say, use some sort of incentive. So, free shipping on your next order, 10% off your next order, something like that. And you could put that little footer at the bottom of every blog post. You could have it in your sidebar, depending on your website design. Every time somebody buys something from me on Etsy, I send them a custom thank you message. And in my PS, I actually say, if you want 10% off your next order, go sign up to my mailing list, and I give them the link. So, there's always, you never sign someone up to your mailing list without their permission, but you give them as many opportunities as possible to sign up. So you make it clear, you put it in that PS, you put it in your email signature, you put it on your website, maybe even at the bottom of a description or something on your website. So as many places as you possibly can to encourage that and give them a reason for it as well. So that's what you really Because what you really want to be doing is giving them that reason and encouraging them to sign up.
This is a totally different way of thinking about mailing lists, because the only place I have ever collected names was at live events.
Ah, I see.
And then, you know, a handful of people are willing to put down their email address, and then half of them are legible. And, you know, so and then, you know, like, you just very slowly build a following, but putting it everywhere is it's funny things like this that why this is so important. I needed somebody to be like, hey, you should put that everywhere.
Yeah, absolutely. That's good. I'm glad you've had that little epiphany. That's a good thing.
Yeah, very much so. Thank you.
That's all right. Yeah, so put it everywhere. Encourage people to sign up. You know, give set up with MailChimp or somewhere that gives you an opt-in link option. And then obviously take that to shows. Another thing that a lot of people are doing nowadays is if you have a tablet, instead of getting people to actually write it on a form, have your tablet with you with the sign up link, and people can type their email address and sign up right there and then.
Yes, I actually just saw that when I was registering for MailChimp, and I thought that was genius. Yes. So this coming year when I go to those, that will be the tablet will be there with me.
That's awesome.
And ready to collect names.
Because you negate that whole illegible issue, but you also have a closer interaction with the person. Like, you're like, oh, you know, hey, great, thanks for signing up and sort of thing. So, yeah, that's definitely something to consider. Yay. Okay. Now, with your brand, I just want to come back to that quickly, because I was looking at your website. Now, I think your photos are beautiful. You've done a really good job with those. You know, you've got a little bit of styling, but it's not too much styling, and it really shows the images nicely and clearly and bright, and the background's lovely. To me, though, your logo doesn't fit with your products.
Okay.
So what I would suggest, and this was, you know, thinking about your target customer, have a logo that actually reflects your art style. You know, I'm thinking something a little bit, I think, you know, the idea of a kind of cursive script is nice, but there should also be some watercolor maybe, or some flowers or something, you know, that really brings out that beautiful nature and the colors and the watercolor element of your designs. And I think just doing that one thing would make a huge difference.
So just adapting the one I have with some watercolor on it?
You could adapt it, or you could play around with changing the font. You know,
actually, it is my handwriting.
Oh, okay. Right.
The
weirdest
thing ever, because it seems like it's really creepy to see my handwriting on a business card.
Yeah.
But, you know, I just sort of played around with it like that. But the reason for it, and I think you can probably maybe tell in some of the pictures, where I have my logo printed out, just the handwriting and the like Etsy website on vellum paper. So it's actually like somewhat translucent, so you can see painting behind it.
Yes.
But I like the idea of adding an element to it with some watercolor.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Because your logo is black and white, but your artwork's also colorful, and it seems like a bit of a schism, like it doesn't seem to fit together. So something like that, I think. Or, you know, and like your tagline, I'd probably take it out from being on top of the word, because it's kind of hard to read.
Okay.
So moving that, you know, either underneath or to the left or right, or even at the top right, like past the L, that could be another place to put it. And just having something there, even if it's like a splash of color in the background. I don't know. I'm thinking something that really ties your logo with your artwork and really reflects the style of your artwork, I think would make a big difference.
Interesting. Okay, very good. I like that idea.
Yeah, and coming up with some, like, you know, your kind of three core brand colors, that's always a good thing to do, and then you can use those colors across everything you do. So that's always something I advise, is to try to come up with those three colors that reflect your brand to your customer.
Okay.
Cool.
Three colors.
Just so it's not overwhelming. It's nice to have three colors to kind of stick with.
Right.
Basically.
No, it's overwhelming to choose three.
Oh, yeah, exactly. How do you choose three? Now, I just want to touch on the where do you see your business in 3 years? You definitely want to expand. Artwork on teacups. I love that idea. I think that's also perfect for your demographic.
I am freaking out about that idea, you know, as I was filling out the questionnaire. And I was like, 3 years. And I started being like really conservative, saying, you know, I would really like to, you know, just expand my brand. And then all of a sudden I was like, no, you know what? I want to go big. I want makeup. So I don't know how I go about that, but I would love to have my art on teacups.
Look, I don't know how you do it either, but I'm sure it's figure outable. So
it's my goal. It's my new goal in life.
That's
is
great.
To get my artwork on teacups.
I think that's
so
perfect.
If anybody listening or on the Facebook group has any connections to Royal Albert or any other teacup companies, you let me know. Oh my goodness. Yes, I want to expand. So I've been growing very organically. Mm-hmm. And I think that's been important for me trying to get this to work in general. But, you know, I love the idea of expanding it and trying to, you know, actually get some feedback. I know we had talked, I'm in the wholesale class. And so we had talked a little bit about how to get feedback from wholesale stockists about what their customers are saying and about what it is that they stock and what would work well. So I'm starting to look into that too, for the 3-year plan.
That's awesome. Yay. Yeah. Now just, you know, because you talk a little bit about the teacups and the decor and stuff. A couple of names of designers came to mind. Orla Keeley, Kath Kidson, like they're both kind of more surfacey pattern designers, but they've done that whole thing where it's like they've got some key elements and some key artwork or whatever, and then expanded to make these huge worldwide brands. So, you know, mm-hmm. It's always an option. So I would actually do some, if I was you personally, I would do some research, try to find some other artists who have done that, you know, try to mm-hmm. find some people who have done that expansion and see kind of their progression and study what they did, because that could help you work out, you know, the path that you do or don't want to go down in the future.
Right. Okay.
It's always good to do that. Now, quickly, we've got our 3 specific questions. So I think we've talked about the whole vibe of the artwork versus the website and shop. So I definitely think we want to bring more color and a watercolor feel into your actual, you know, shop brand design and your logo and everything like that. So your website, where can I target my efforts to make it more user-friendly and cohesive to my brand? So you're using, what is it, Vistaprint, a website builder? Okay, well, for now, I would spend your time focusing on the branding. Don't worry so much about faffing with the website. Like, you've got a website, it's there. I would work on getting your logo and your colors and stuff like that done. And then once you've done that, and you feel more comfortable and confident with your overall branding, then you can start kind of maybe working on the website and fiddling with that. I mean, what you've got there now is basic, but it's fine. You know, you don't need to have a whiz-bang really fancy website at this stage. You can always do that in the future. It's a work in progress. So, yeah, I think the branding is definitely the number one thing for you to focus on for now. And we've talked a bit about the Facebook thing, which was your 3rd question. And you might even consider, you know, I was reading an article the other day that Facebook, you know, is heavily relying on getting people to pay for advertising now if you want to build your brand presence on Facebook, which is frustrating, but they are a business and, you know, it's their prerogative to charge us for the service. So when you've kind of got your branding sorted out and you've started, you know, using your Facebook page, just play around with that a little bit, you know, boost a post here and there. You might even want to run a small ad campaign to gain more followers to your Facebook page. But then obviously, you know, paying for likes is not ideal. What you want to be doing is driving people directly to your mailing list or to your shop rather than, you know, the paying for likes thing, because you don't own that, whereas you own your mailing list. So that might be something, and that goes for everybody listening. You know, guys, if you want to, you know, play around with any sort of advertising, Facebook advertising is a great option because it is really affordable. Like, you could spend $10 and that's it, and see what happens. So you don't have to invest a lot of money in it or a lot of time in it. So that might be something to think about as well.
Okay, very good.
Now, is there anything else that you wanted to talk with me about before we wrap up today, Steph?
No, I think, you know, like, it's, I definitely need to wrap my head around the brand, but I think what we've discussed has been really helpful. I just want to, you know, thank you, of course, for putting together this group, which is wonderful, and I'm so very much enjoying it. And I know a lot of the people here have been really helpful and supportive of each other, which is great. So,
yay! That's great to hear. It. Thank you. There's a lot. You've probably just been chatting to me, but when you finish talking to me, head over to the chat in the Facebook group. There's some suggestions for you there for from the circle.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, all the circle members. I'm so happy. Thank you.
And I'll talk to you in the circle, Stephanie. Thank you so much for talking with me today.
Will do. Thanks, Jess. Have a great one.
You too. Bye-bye. That was great. Thank you so much, Stephanie. Thanks to everybody, too, who's listening along, putting suggestions in the chat. Guys, do you prefer the chat in the Facebook group to the chat on the site? I don't know. You all seem to be having an awesome time in there. Let me know, because we can always do it that way in future. It's just as easy to do it either way. So if you prefer that, that's great. All right, so one person down, another one to go, and we're going to be talking to Greg from Bottles and Bits. So Kath's going to put his link into the Facebook group so you guys can check out his super cute shop. And let's dive into that and... Greg, you're live. Hello.
Hi.
It's great to have you here.
Great to be here. I'm excited.
Awesome. Okay, so can you just tell us a little bit about who you are, where you are, and what you make before we get started?
Yeah, sure. I'm in America also. I'm in Minnesota, which is closer to Canada. People like to make fun of the accent out here sometimes. You know, the Minnesota, yeah. You're like, we don't actually talk like that. Then I don't.
You've got that German kind of background up there, eh?
Right, yeah, yeah. A lot of German history out here. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, and I, Bottles and Bits, kind of inspired by my daughter, is the shop. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, what was the other part of the question?
Oh, yeah. So, how did you get into making what you make?
I get into making lots of things. So it kind of started with a job I was working previously where I was doing their SEO for them with their Amazon and eBay shops and stuff like that. And so I knew I wanted to get into kind of more e-commerce stuff as I do a lot of computer related things. And I wanted something small and something that I could incorporate kind of my art type stuff into. And I found these, my wife had shown me these things on Pinterest called bottle charms. And I was like, okay, this is cool. I'm like, I can. And so I got a bunch of the bottles and started dabbling around with it and kind of quickly realized that there's really, you can kind of do anything with them.
Yes.
I love like all the potential of it. They're easy to customize. There's about a million different sizes. And the benefit is it's not just regular jewelry, which allows me to specialize a little bit, which because I know that can be difficult. So that's kind of how I got into it. And I just and my daughter, of course, has, you know, I wanted it fantasy based, something unique, something zany, something that can be kind of funny.
Yeah, yeah. It's really cool. And I mean, when I saw your shop for the first time, I haven't seen anything really like that before. It stood out. You know, I think you've already done a really good job of your branding in that it's all very cohesive. And it definitely stands out as being, you know, that sort of stuff for the younger girls, fantasy sort of pretty sort of thing. And when you say you've got your young daughter, that makes perfect sense. I mean, I wanted to talk to you about your target market or ideal customer because in your questionnaire, are you happy for me to share what you wrote in your questionnaire?
Yeah, by all means.
Awesome. So you said that, you know, your biggest problem is finding the right direction to take your product in, that the bottles can be so many things that you struggle which way to go. Should you concentrate on necklaces or keychains? And also the price point. Now, I think that all comes together. And I think the underlying thing that will make this easier is knowing who that target market is or ideal customer is. So do you have a clear idea of that already?
I think so. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess I set out that I'm shooting for my target market. I'm not even sure exactly what the age would be, but it would be more like families, parents, mm-hmm. Probably primarily women, Pinterest users. That was kind of what I assumed it would be around there. I know bottle charms can also appeal to what some people call it, the gamer crowd.
Yep.
Although I would consider, I would, Yeah, and the geeks and stuff like that, which I definitely am. But I wouldn't consider them my target, but I do realize that they're also going to, they'll fall into it a little bit too. But definitely more of a parents or even grandparents looking for, you know, some people just have to get a unique gift. So I guess I'm kind of looking for those kind of people that really kind of put that effort in to find something interesting.
So you've kind of got, you've almost got two target customers in that your actual person who's buying this is going to be the mother or the aunt or the grandmother or something like that. But it's for their daughter or granddaughter or niece or something like that. Would that be accurate?
Correct.
Right.
And I guess I've realized based on some feedback from people, I mean, some of these, you know, like some people are, have given me feedback like, well, don't make it so specific that they're for children, because a lot of them are like, well, I would wear that too.
Yes.
So, and that's kind of what, which is, and then I guess that's kind of where I've had a little, I guess I feel like I could really go any direction I want. So I guess I'm still kind of out there kind of feeling around for where to take it. Cause I mean, do I write more generic to be, cause I don't want to corner it on children and then have other people be like, well, I would wear that, but that's, I guess it's not, those are just kids' necklaces, you know?
Right. Okay. Well, I think, you know, I think knowing who you're targeting is going to help you with that. And kind of like I was talking about with Stephanie, sometimes you just have to run with something for a while and see where it goes. So, you know, if you wanted to just run with the child angle and see where it went, you could do that. Or you could do different lines. Like you could do lines that are based at kids, and then you could do the lines that are based at the geeks, which I am one of, like, you know, the Harry Potter stuff and, you know, stuff to do with even Lord of the Rings and, you know, those sorts of stuff that people get really obsessed with. One of my friends is a huge fan of Supernatural, and she makes jewelry that's like Supernatural themed. So, you know, there's that whole element of possibility, and those people spend money on stuff because they love to show their support of the thing that they are a big fan of, right? That's why things like Comic-Con are so ridiculously successful, because they're adults who like to play. You know, they want to indulge their that sort of child aspect of themselves and dress up and live in fantasy worlds. And, you know, my husband's a big gamer and I'm a huge reader, so I can totally understand that that desire to do that. So, you know, that looking at your products, I mean, I noticed a few things, like there was a gillyweed one, which I was like, oh, Harry Potter gillyweed. Like, I'm a big Harry Potter fan, so as soon as I saw that, I knew, you know, the connection there. So that's, you know, that's definitely a target market that you could go for. There's also one that popped into my head is kind of the kwai, the cute sort of Japanesey market as well. You know, they love that sort of stuff. It's just like, it's right down the alley of the kwai sort of genre, I guess. So that could be another target market that you could go after if you wanted to well.
That was a keyword I had bumped into kind of when I was going into it. And the Harry Potter, like when I first saw the bottle charms, I definitely first started bumping into the Harry Potter ones. And I haven't fully went that route, if only just because I don't want, at least right from the get-go of the shop, to look like I'm trying to duplicate somebody else right off the bat.
Absolutely.
Like on the gillyweed one, I use that more as a keyword than really labeling it gillyweed just for that reason. But
yeah, and that's cool.
Yeah, but there's so much of that stuff out there. That's what I love so much.
Yeah, and I really respect that, you know, that you don't want to copy what other people are doing. You want to come up with your own unique kind of style and your own unique direction for this sort of stuff. So if we look at the price points, guys, if you're listening, I'd love you to go check out Greg's store. I'd like to hear what you think of the prices he's already got on the stuff he's got in his shop. My initial feel was too low, but that's usually what I think about everybody. I think, you know, especially if it's adults buying it for kids. I mean, I'm not a parent. I'm about to be an aunt, so that's quite exciting. But, you know, if I was buying a present for my niece or a friend's kid or something like that, I'd happily drop $25 on a cute necklace. Like, that would be, it wouldn't even kind of register. It'd be like, oh, yeah, that's a fine price. Whereas, you know, price point is also it's also a value indicator to people. So if you price too low, people will turn away from it because they don't think it's quality. And if you price too high, people will turn away from it because they think it's overpriced. So the key is finding, for your target market, the key is finding that sweet spot of pricing to where they would buy it. Like, if your target market for the people who are actually buying your stuff was tweens, then the prices you have, I think, are okay because they don't have, you know, they've got their pocket money, they don't have a lot of money. But because the adults are actually probably doing the buying, you probably can charge a little bit more, especially if you're going to go down that sort of the kwai or the geeky sort of road. Then, you know, they're adults buying for themselves, so they're happy to spend a little bit more money on something unique and fun.
Yeah, and I think I've actually dropped them twice, and I think that's just like I get anxious, kind of like all year. I'm like, because like I do spend time looking around Etsy, and I definitely don't want to be the lowest. I'm a firm believer that if anything, I'd always want to be, you know, above middle, if in any market, but or higher. But the prices are just so wildly different on Etsy that I just kind of like, you know, I actually did have them closer to 20 at the get go.
Mm-hmm. I think that's
That's good to hear that you're feeling that
they could go higher. You know, and I talk to this about with people a lot. You know, you can't, for one thing, don't ever use the prices on Etsy as your guidepost because they are, as a whole, artificially low, especially because, you know, there are still a lot of resellers and stuff. But there's also a lot of people who genuinely are handmakers who live in countries where the dollar is worth a lot more, so they don't need to charge as much. Okay, so there's always that issue as well to remember. And but it really comes down to your brand positioning of your product. You know, people will, if they get on there and they find your shop, whether it's on Etsy or on your website or wherever else, and you put your stuff forward in a way that they are convinced that it's quality and that it's good, they will pay for it. So, yeah, I think even experiment, I mean, I don't know how much of a following you already have, but if you're still at that kind of beginning stage and people aren't really paying too close of attention, I would actually try like whacking the prices up by like $10 and just experimenting with it for 3 months and see what happens. Because why not? You know, you may as well try it.
Right.
You haven't got anything to lose really in the long term, because that way you can prove to yourself one way or the other. You can say, well, either these higher prices, maybe they're not making any difference. Maybe you're making the same amount of sales and you're earning more money with the same amount of sales, things like that. And it's always really, really scary to put your prices up. I totally understand that. I've done it a few times and it's always terrifying because you always wonder if people are going to ever buy anything ever again, but chances are they will.
Yeah, and I don't mind, and like, it's not a big following yet, to be honest. I wasn't planning to put much money into any advertising. I haven't done any advertising other than just general Facebook and Pinterest, which I do have a couple of these ones that are been just getting passed around on Pinterest, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
Until I exceed probably 100, 150 items, I'm considering pretty much any sale just kind of icing on the cake, and I'm going to be more aggressive once I get the products up a little bit. At least that was based on just like my e-commerce experience. That was kind of where I wasn't going to start gauging my success too early, just because, you know, when there's millions of products out there, you need a fair amount out there to start with. That's my feeling.
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, that's a really good point. And you put that as one of your goals within the next 6 months, to have 200 items properly tagged and with unique descriptions with that consistent branding. And I think that's really important. Like, the more products you can get out there that are consistent with your brand. Like, some people, like when I know I, you know, was experimenting with a lot of things, I had this huge product line, but then I culled stuff because it was getting too messy. But if everything is coherent and works well together, then having more products means more people find you, which is always a good thing. And you understand SEO, so you know, obviously you know how that works, and that's good.
To a point, Etsy is a little bit different than some of the other areas, but I think I got it's about as clear as mud at this point. So
yeah. It's all about experimentation. It's really all,
right,
yeah.
Right.
It's just trying and trying and see what happens. Somebody in there's a lot of comments going on in the Facebook group, but Elizabeth said, "Have you ever sold at a Renaissance festival?" I have a friend who's juggling at one in Minnesota soon. So there's obviously one coming up. And I think that's a really good call. Like, you know, if you do want to aim at that more adult market, Renaissance fairs or medieval festivals, you know, Comic-Con, those sorts of, you know, geek festivals and conventions and stuff like that could be a really good place for you to test out your stuff, if not just, you know.
I do want to do that. And Renaissance Festival, the one she's mentioning there, is huge here in Minnesota. That's coming up in a little while. But I guess my initial feeling is I'm not sure I'll have the inventory built up yet. So right now I'm kind of hoping to maybe find something late fall that I might take aim for. I don't know. I want to do something that big, but I feel like I might not be able to be ready for that yet. Maybe not. I haven't had any experience doing that yet.
Okay, but that's a good thing to know. Like, if I was in your situation, I would say, okay, well, maybe next year I'll do it, and this year I'm going to go scope it out. So I'm actually going to go there, look around, and see what people are selling and how it's going, so that I know if I want to do it or not.
That's a good way to look at it. Yeah,
yeah, that's what I do with big markets. If I don't do markets very often; it's very rare. But if I consider doing, especially one that costs quite a bit of money and it's a big investment, I would always bide my time and actually go as a customer or a participant to the event first to really get a feel for it and how it runs. Because, you know, we're in this for the long run, right? It's not like something you're just going to stop in 6 months' time. Your aim is to build it up to a successful business over years. So you can think of things in that long term and go, okay, well, that's for next year. I'm going to do this and that. So, yeah, that's definitely something I would suggest.
Okay, yeah, no, I like that. That's a good way to put it. So then I don't have to feel like I just can't do it. Don't have to necessarily ignore it. If I don't have the inventory, I can still be doing the research on it.
So. Yes, exactly. Kath also mentioned steampunk as a suggestion. Have you thought about doing some steampunk stuff?
Yeah, I got just a couple on there. They're like these teardrop. They're actually the ones that are going all over Pinterest.
Okay.
My most successful one on Pinterest is this, it's a gold steampunk vial necklace.
Cool.
That one I've been doing really well with. I haven't sold it, though, of course, but yeah, people like it. I actually just sold, I don't know, the fairy dust ones is really the major sales I've had so far have just been the fairy dust ones. And I have about 20 more of those that I just haven't uploaded yet. I just haven't quite put it up. So I got another 20 different fairy dust designs that are ready to go.
Excellent. Oh, just to clarify, that steampunk was apparently a comment from Steph, who we just had on the call earlier, not from Kath. So thanks, Steph. Awesome. Okay, so let's have a look back here at our questionnaire. So we've talked about, you know, the direction that you want to take it in. And, you know, that's something everybody can give advice on, but it really comes down to you in the end of the day and the market you think will be, you know, the stuff that you really want to make and the people that you think will love it and pay for it. And that's always, you know, the key, obviously. So with your business, so you had where do you see your business in 3 years? You said you'd like to see it as an authority.
Before I do that, I just want to comment on one thing, because I forgot to kind of mention it, is I think I had mentioned on the questionnaire, this is the biggest feedback I'm getting right now from people, is when they look at the biggest thing that I put up first, just because it's the easiest stuff to kind of get some product out there first, are the bottle charm category. Mm-hmm. And I get a lot of people that like them, but they're like, they don't necessarily feel like it's something they'd wear on their neck. So right. It was brought up to me that why don't I either have it as a variation or do another category where I do a lot of the same similar things, but people can get them as keychains or purse, little attachments, zipper pulls. I was curious what feedback you might have on that.
I think that's actually a really, really good idea. I think, you know, the keychain thing, the zipper pull, especially for kids, because they have them on their bags and stuff like that. All of those sorts of the ways that you might attach it to something. Like, there's also, I know this is, you know, we all love our personalized stuff, but having ones that the name is personalizable, like the actual, have you got one already? I don't know. The actual label, you can put someone's name. So that could be like a keychain for a girl or a zipper pull for a girl or a boy that they could, you know, their parents could choose the name and get it printed on there for them, something like that. So that's always a fun thing, you know, because kids love to get something that has, you know, their name on it. It's like, oh my God, it's made just for me. And you, being handmade, you have the ability to do that.
That's actually in the works. I'm currently teaching myself right now. I already bought the supplies and I've been practicing. I'm actually working on hand stamping, and I'm going to be incorporating little rectangular hand stamp tags and stuff like that in along with that. And I know that's very popular on Etsy.
Yes.
So yeah. I figured that would be kind of like a grand slam to combine those. So.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's a really, really good idea. Like I do personalized stuff and it's always really successful. And everybody loves, you know, to be able to do that sort of thing. So that's, I think, yes, that's, I know you put that in here as an option and as one of your questions, and mine is a resounding yes to doing that. I think that would be really successful. And you can always, and you can charge a little bit more for those as well, you know, increase the price point on those because they do have a separate element and they are personalized as well, which is great. Okay, so where do you see your business in 3 years? What are you aiming for? Share that with us.
My aim in 3 years would be to definitely be successful on Etsy by then. with a lot of products. I would also like to, I also personally aim to have a fair amount of traffic going on Amazon as well. Mm-hmm. In addition to my own website. I'm capable of building my own website. I'm putting all my effort more into just the products right now because that just will add a lot more to it. But, I'm definitely kind of have my sights on Amazon a little bit. Only not for the same amount of stuff, though.
Mm-hmm.
Amazon isn't exactly made to order, as I'm sure we're all aware.
Yes.
So just anything that is easy to mass produce, maybe just some like the more basic stuff. So I don't plan on like duplicating it on Amazon by any means, but
yeah,
I am interested in kind of diversifying. I'm always scared of what happens if there's a huge policy shift in one market, and I don't ever want to be in danger of that. I've seen it happen to other businesses.
Yes, putting all your eggs in one basket is always a bit dangerous.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So that's kind of, I guess that's where I see myself, just busy in several different markets.
Yep, that's good. I think that's a really good aim. And you, I don't know if you know and everybody else listening knows, but Amazon's actually introducing a handmade marketplace sometime soon. So that's going to be a bit of a game changer. they've started putting out applications for expressions of interest for people who want to be on Amazon Handmade. So, yes, we all have to keep an eye on that and see what happens there. So that could be.
I can just imagine that angering a lot of people.
Yes.
Like, I think Amazon's already got their hands in enough stuff. Come on.
Yeah, I know. I think there has been a lot of upset about it. But I think as from a business perspective, it's definitely something to be aware of and something to keep an eye on to see what happens with it. Because I have no idea how Amazon are actually going to do that because they're all about the fast delivery and the da-da-da, you know. So that's totally the opposite of what what Handmade is all about. But Cass just put the link in the Facebook chat so people who want to find out more about it can do that. So, yeah, that could be interesting. All right, so what have we talked about? We've talked about hand stamping. Do your products feel unique? Or does it feel more of the same that's already out there? Now, it's unique to me because I'm not the target market for this. It's like when I saw your shop, I was like, oh, that's so adorable. I've never seen stuff like this before. So, you know, to me, it was definitely something unique that I hadn't come across. You know, obviously, I've seen sort of bottle necklaces and stuff before, but you are developing quite a strong aesthetic, which is different to what I've seen elsewhere and also works well together. So, yeah, those of you listening, I'd love to hear what you think about the uniqueness of Greg's products as well. So, yeah, for me, they are definitely unique and they stand out as something fun and interesting that I haven't seen elsewhere. And with your website, so do you just have the Etsy shop or do you actually have a website?
Just the Etsy shop for right now.
Yep. Awesome. Okay. And that's fine. Like you said, I think at this stage in your business, focusing on your branding and your product development to get that built up is probably the best use of your time. And then once you've got that more secure, then, you know, move on to the website building and stuff like that. And you obviously know how to do that, so that's not going to be an issue for you and your business.
Right. I might get the blog going at some point, like maybe with Squarespace, probably. I'm a huge Squarespace advocate, if anybody's ever heard me pipe up about that, because they handle all the server stuff. It's just all those kind of problems people can have. It's just so much easier. It's great for busy people. But so I might get that going in a little bit. But
cool.
Yeah.
Is it very expensive, Squarespace?
Not too bad. I mean, WordPress is more free if you know what you're doing, because you're just buying, you know, WordPress itself is free, and you can get a cheap hosting.
Yeah.
That being said, I think if you pay annually on Squarespace, if you're doing 20 or less pages, which will be most people's mm-hmm. sites at first, I think you can do it for, what is it, the equivalent of like $8 a month.
Oh, okay, that's pretty good.
Yeah, I think it's very reasonable considering they handle everything. All you have to do is make content. So
yeah, and can you put a shopping cart on that?
You can. That will change the price,
right?
I think to their highest tier, which is probably closer to like $25 a month.
Okay, but honestly, where if you have your own website with your own shopping cart, you're probably going to be paying around about that amount of money, no matter what, really.
If I was going shopping cart, I'd almost probably recommend Shopify. I'd probably go there at that point, just because mm-hmm. it's way more, it'd integrate way better with Etsy.
Yeah, definitely. Cool. Okay, thank you for that. But yeah, I think a blog, and again, a mailing list, I'm always harping on about that, but it is important. And the sooner you can kind of try to build that up, the better, especially when you've got a lot of new products and you plan to be releasing new stuff on a regular basis. A mailing list is a great way to keep in touch with your audience. Obviously, you're working Pinterest, so that's doing well for you, which is definitely a good choice. Are you on any other social media?
I do
regularly?
Facebook. I haven't posted. I got kind of busy the last couple of weeks here, but I have done the Facebook. I just find that unless I'm paying for it, I don't know if anybody's noticed, but
yep.
If you initially, when I first started with Etsy, I was like all excited, and I was playing those games.
Mm-hmm.
Or everybody tends to refer to them as games, but if you get your likes too high in your Facebook, you'll notice that your reach starts going down, because
yes.
people aren't interacting, they're just yes. liking your page. And now I'm getting like a reach of like 7 or 8 for anything I post on Facebook, so I'm kind of in a, it kind of screws you over a little bit.
Yeah, I highly recommend people don't do that for that, especially now, for that very reason. You only want genuine likes, because otherwise, yeah, you'll reach tanks. So you might even consider at this stage, Greg, if you want to, actually going through and canning some of your likers, the ones who are only there because of those games, because I know that'll drop your liker numbers, but it will increase your reach, and that will be more powerful in the long
run. Oh, yeah, I agree. Yeah, I stopped playing it, but I hadn't thought of actually pruning some of those. That's not a bad idea.
Yeah, definitely do that, because that'll mean that the genuine fans will be more likely to see your stuff, because they'll engage with it, and the more people engage, the more it shows up. So, yeah, definitely an important tip, that one.
Yeah, I would say Pinterest and Instagram are probably the ones that my gut instinct tells me might be the better ones. At least Pinterest seems like it. I know a lot of these bottle type stuff, I think, just work well with that kind of thing. Maybe
yeah.
not. We'll see.
No, I think Pinterest is perfect, because people, you know, it's cute stuff that people like to share. And I think, another thing I thought of just right then, party favors. Have you thought about doing sort of, you know, kids' parties that parents are spending a lot of money. A lot of parents are spending a lot of money on kids' parties these days. So,
yeah,
you know,
you kind of laugh about this. So I have the idea. I must have like 100 little of my smallest bottles sitting here. And my biggest problem is, and if anybody can help me with this, I would love you forever. But I don't want to use regular chains for them to keep the cost down, because parents aren't going to go buy. So I'm trying to use ribbon.
Right.
And I've seen how it's done on Pinterest, but that's getting a little outside. So I just have not found a great way how to tie it, how to make it look nice. And it sounds silly, and my wife was helping me with it. So I'm still having ribbon issues with that. But yeah, I am planning to do something of that nature. But using ribbon allows me to keep my costs down
yes.
and allow parents less stress if they have 10 kids there and they don't have them all fumbling with ball chain class and stuff like that. So.
Awesome. Okay. Oh, Stephanie's just given you a link to someone who sells bulk ribbon necklaces, so that's a cool option anyway, possibly. So, like, pre-made ones, which might work if you can buy that.
Yeah, even, yeah, pre-made would be fine. Like, yeah. I figure I'm putting all my effort into kind of, I'm good with Illustrator, so I'm, like, if you look at this mermaid bottle that I did, which was inspired by my mom, who likes to do make pretend magic things, like with my daughter. So I can design cool stuff with the labels, so I don't mind some pre-made stuff that more with the, as far as chains to a point go, as long as I can, because I can, I think I could still be unique in what I'm doing in the bottle and on that kind of, all the neat digital media stuff.
Oh, I like the mermaid. I'm just looking at the mermaid one now. It's really cute. Awesome. All right.
I only have one so far, but I'm planning to develop that one out a little bit. But yeah. But I'm not focusing too much on the decor stuff right now.
Okay, cool. So let me just have a quick look. I think we've covered pretty much everything you put in your questionnaire, and our time is almost at an end. Is there anything else you wanted to bring up and ask me and the circle while I've got you here?
Not off the top of my head, no. We always have the Facebook group, so I can always jump in there. But I'm excited to read everybody's comments in here, and looks like a lot of helpful stuff. Thank you, everybody.
Awesome. Thank you so much for coming on the call. I hope you got some good sort of feedback and direction out of that, and let us know how it goes in the group.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Okay. Bye, Greg.
Bye.
Ah, what two awesome calls today, everybody. That has been fantastic. Thank you so much for all of your comments in the Facebook group. Look at all these suggestions rolling in. It's fantastic. Now, do we have questions for me and Kath? Now is the time to ask us those questions, your burning questions that you would like her and I to answer. And I think Kath will say hello shortly when she's ready.
Hello, how are you going?
Very well, very well,
I've
my dear.
I've been very busy in this chat screen in the Thriver Circle Facebook page, which has been fantastic. It's been so good.
I think we should do it in here from now on. What do you think?
I think so too. Yeah, definitely. It seems like it's been fun. Yeah,
yeah, everyone's popping in and listening along and stuff like that. So that's really awesome. Thanks to everybody who's been giving suggestions. I'll have a look in our Q&A section in our website. We don't have anything in there. So did you have anything, guys, listening? Or were there any questions earlier in that thread, Kath, at all, that you picked out?
Most of them were really awesome suggestions for both of the business owners that we've done the intensive for today. So that's really great. So nice to see that, you know, so many people are wanting to, you know, put in their 2 cents or sort of give options or suggestions of things that they could do. The only thing that was brought up was we were talking, was who started that little thread? I know Anna Lee had a bit of a conversation about the multiple types of logo, so having a colour and a black and white one and a white version of your logo so that you can use it in different sort of places. Yeah,
that's
so
a
that
really good idea, actually.
To put it over the top of a very dark background. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's something that I've got for my shop and I find it really beneficial. So, you know, if you're getting your logo done, it would take no time at all if you had a designer or if you were designing yourself to make it into those three different options.
That is a very, very good point. I didn't think about that.
Yeah, so that was cool. And people were getting very excited about the teacup idea earlier.
I think that's just perfect, especially for the, you know, Steph, if you're still listening, for your, you know, your designs, it's just a perfect match really, isn't it?
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, I don't think we've got any particular questions, though. So, honestly, it's all, all lovely comments.
Great. Mm. Well, one thing I did want to just touch on is the podcast from last week, because we had a little bit of discussion about the whole copying issue. Mm. And in that podcast, I talked about anonymously talked about some issues that a couple of Circle members had come up across. And we had a bit more of a discussion about that. Specifically, there was one instance, it was Blender, who brought up an something that had happened in her local area. And I just wanted to touch on that quickly because I thought it was really important. Now, for those of you who haven't listened to that podcast, it's, you know, how I suggest people deal with copycats. And my main suggestion is basically move on. Like, don't engage. Try to, you know, focus on your own business. Obviously, there's caveats to that, but as a general rule. And Blender brought up an issue whereby there was actually one art in a local area, one artist is copying numerous other artists in that area. So she's copying their products, their tags, their photos, their descriptions and classes and everything like that. And she said, you know, I love your suggestions about turning your energy to your own work, but what about when this happens? You know, like, that is an example of where you probably do have to deal with it, unfortunately.
I agree with you, and I think and you've talked about it in that chat as well, in the Thrivers Circle Facebook group, because obviously it's she seems to be having a bad time, that person who's doing that copying, and so, you know, it doesn't sound like she's a very happy person in herself, and it's probably, you know, something to think about when somebody's copying you, you know. They haven't got the creativity, and therefore they're not going to have a sustainable business if all they're doing is copying what other people are doing. But it does come to a point where if it's really desperately affecting you, then you'll need to do something about it so that you can move on, so that you can move on and get on with your own business and your own life.
Yeah. I think in that particular case, especially, and I think it's almost a blessing that she's doing it to multiple people, because they can come together and band together and help each other and support each other present a united front about it. And obviously, you know, I made a really good point of collecting evidence. Like, you really need to have the evidence to prove that somebody is doing this, and, you know, save screenshots, photocopy stuff, whatever it is, that will prove that a person is copying. And then you can take, you know, in that case, I think the artist should get together and actually approach her as a group and say, we know what you're doing. You know, here's our evidence. Why? And I think, you know, asking that person, why are you doing this? Because I think when somebody is copying people that blatantly, there's something wrong, you know.
There's something going on. Yeah. That's it.
And, you know, only by people kind of sticking together and opposing that is it going to change. And, you know, you may even need to get a lawyer involved and do a cease and desist letter. And, you know, again, if you can, you know, that's kind of, I think that's a step you can take once you have the evidence, that's not too expensive or stressful. And hopefully most people will abide by that. Because after all, once you've done that, if they don't abide by that, you're kind of what do you do? Like, you either, you know, can you take them? Can you take them to court? Can you take them to the court of public opinion? You know, that's kind of, I think people rush to that step too quickly, and I think that should actually be a last resort.
Absolutely. Yeah, I agree. I think, often you can probably sort things out just with a conversation. And if you can do that privately, then I think that's all the better for it.
Yeah. And I think, I know I can think of someone who will remain anonymous who's had issues with people copying her stuff before, who sells wholesale predominantly. And in her case, I think, you know, building a good, strong relationship with her wholesalers is probably the best way to fend that off. Because if they know her and they're familiar with her work, they're going to see. You don't have to tell them. They're going to know if somebody is trying to, you know, copy you and angle in on your, basically on your turf, if you know what I mean. So I think that's a really, you know, doing the best you can to build strong relationships with your customers is the best thing you can do.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Awesome. Oh, we've got a question from Lindsay.
One more question, yeah. So from Lindsay, when everybody talks about telling their story, do you actually mean about talking about how you actually started, or about me? or kind of about my brand story and what my brand means? What do you say to that?
Both. So you do tell your story in that, you know, you can tell the story of how you got started, why you're doing what you're doing. A lot of people stop there, though, and that's a mistake because that's just, like you said, that's talking about me, and you actually want to be talking to and about your customer. So you actually want to, in your brand story, you want to be focusing on what your brand means to your customer. So actually writing it to bring out the benefits of your product to your target customer. I actually was, I don't know what I was reading, something, or listening to something. I think it was Seth Godin. It's always Seth Godin.
He's a good one, isn't he?
Something about storytelling, and it just hit me that, you know, even I think I do an okay job of this in my ethereal business, but I could do an even better job. And I actually have written, I haven't published it yet or finished it, but I've actually written what's going to be a whole page on my website, which will be why are ethereal wedding rings for you? And I'm actually going to write from the customer's perspective, like, you know, you believe this. This is what you hold dear. And actually really being really, you know, really trying to understand my target customer and getting in their head and trying to connect with them by getting in their head and saying, I know that this is what matters to you and that's why what we make will be the right choice for you. So, you know, so I think if
that's
if you can really do that and actually tell the story so that your customers will see themselves in that story and see what they care about in that story, that's going to be way more powerful than just talking about yourself.
Yeah.
And how? Oh, and also connecting yourself with your customer. Like, if there are elements of you and your customer that are the same, like you make this stuff because you are this person, and that happens to be your target market, draw that out as well. Like, draw out the elements of you that will connect most strongly with your target market and your ideal customer. Because obviously, not all of you will, you know, not everything about you will connect with them, but there will be elements that will connect with them, and draw that out in your story as well.
Yeah, fabulous. I think that answers that question. That's awesome.
Excellent. Well, I think we've got all the questions going on there. Everybody's still chatting, which is awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
We might wrap it up there for this week. I know Nick's making me a Caesar salad, and I'm feeling quite hungry.
That sounds good. Nice.
It's getting on to 1 p.m. here. So I think I'm going to, you know, go and have some lunch. And I know Kath's got some busy times away from you. So thanks so much, guys. Mm-hmm. Stephanie and Greg, it was awesome talking to you both. I think you both got a lot to work on after that discussion. Guys, the convo doesn't have to end, you know. Keep chatting in the Facebook group about today's call. If you have any thoughts about it, if you have any suggestions that pop up, you know, when you go to sleep and you wake up in the morning and go, oh, this is a good idea, please come in and share it and help those guys out with that. And this time next month when we talk, it's going to be interesting. I'm going to be in the UK because Nick and I are heading over to the UK and Europe for 3 months, which is very, very exciting. But nothing will change. We will still be running the Thriver Circle and Create and Thrive just like normal, except that I might be a little bit, you know, sleepy when we have our call. Who knows?
Yes, there'll be some timing issues.
There will be some interesting timing issues, but that's okay. So, because I know for this call was not a good time for those of you in the UK and Europe. So next month we'll make sure to pick a time that will be really easy for you guys to get to. And every month we try to rotate things around so everybody gets a chance to be on the call. So thanks so much, everybody, for listening. Remember, you can download the call. I'll have it up within the next 24 hours on the course page for you to download and listen back to whenever you so desire. And thanks so much for joining us today. Bye-bye.
Bye.